turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money at
Menards. Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week, we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That's amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library. The Midnight Library is written and produced by me, Miranda Merrick. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We would like to thank everyone at our parent company, Astonishing Legends. The Midnight Library is being crowdfunded by our awesome patrons. They get everything first, plus lots of haunted extras. If you would miss the library if it closed, please support it. Visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Do this at midnight for extra protection. To find your favorite Midnight Library, Broom and Fang Pub, or League of Lady Gravediggers bizarre merch, visit redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. And everything will be just fine.
Madam, I fear we're going to have our hands full tonight.
Oh?
Many of the guests thought they saw the Mystique in the harbor.
There's every chance they did see her, darling.
Yes, but this evening's reading is coincidentally about ghost ships and sunken dead people. It is a coincidence. Right, madam? Madam?
Oh, my. Yes, come right in. How wonderful to see you. Come in. Yes. Yes, I have heard the ghostly rumors. Aw, come in and find a cozy corner. A safe cozy corner. How nice you look. Oh, Mr. Shaughnessy.
Oh.
Did you wear that sea captain's cap to be cheeky? You devil, you. Oh, no. No. I know how serious it all is. I know how serious you all take it. Please, everyone, curl up on one of the comfy sofas or in a window seat and wrap up in one of the many plush blankets. Or cuddle with a wolf pup by the fire to comfort yourselves. I, Miranda Merrick, am your mistress of the mystical for this maritime-themed evening. Lifeboats, I'm afraid, will not be provided. I'm hoping that tonight's topic will allay your fears and ease your mind about the impending doom. Some of you are no doubt under believe that you are under the threat of having seen, or may have thought that you saw, the beautiful ship,
the Mystique.
Excuse me. in the bay. Which, how could that be? I mean, it's not even proven to be a real ship. My. Oh, I nearly forgot. The hospitality tray is laden with seafaring-type delicacies. There's some manner of heavily salted beef, I believe. Some dried fish that were caught fresh, but we dried them. There's also weak tea. And although I wouldn't go near coffee myself in general, there's a duplication of a maritime coffee made from roasted peas. Desperate measures, I guess. Oh, and authentic hardtack biscuits with surely make-believe rat chew marks. And pretend weevils in them, to make them look authentic. So hurry up and get some. Enjoy. Well, let us address the elephant in the room, shall we? I always think it's best to face one's fears. Or I would, if I had any. So, many of you thought you caught a glimpse of a totally rumored and unfounded ever-to-exist ghost ship, or ethereal vessel, the Mystique, drifting in the little-used inlet of the village's bay. My. Some reported seeing its mighty masts, bedecked with its sails furled up tightly. How enchanting. The Mystique, which we have an in-depth anthology on here somewhere on our towering shelves, which is a work of fiction, no doubt. Do try to not let your vision of it haunt your dreams. I want you to be comforted by the knowledge that human people have been belaboring under the misconception that they have seen with their very own gushy eyeballs phantom or ghost ships for centuries. Isn't that lovely? My dear guest, let me apologize for my habit of romanticizing all things related to tall ships and the sea. I've yet to go deeply enough into trance or to speak to my long-dead elders about the possibility that I may have had a seafaring existence in a past life. But given my proclivity for the adoration of sea life, I feel the possibility is nearly guaranteed. If you don't happen to share my love of the aquatic existence, well, I'm afraid I don't know what's wrong with you. and you should probably see someone about that. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the League of Lady Gravediggers. We know you know the ladies are keen to bury the dead, to help them push up daisies from beneath their eternal bed. But did you ever even know the ladies will search the seas to drag a corpse from far below and wring them out with ease? Big Lou has some scuba gear, and Penny can hold her breath to get that stiff below the pier up from their watery death. They'll search the depth of water, any river, pond, or pool, and find the sunken slaughtered who was pulled down by a ghoul. Slimy, chewed on, or bloated, or nothing left but bones, the ladies have happily boated and dived to Davy Jones. They'll lift that waterlogged dead guy with a slump in the hull of their boat, hang him up till he's dead dry, and the fishies have left his throat. If you have an underwater mystery to solve, call the League of Lady Gravediggers to search for your soggy demise. Prices may vary depending upon depth, murkiness, temperature, salinity, tides, currents, shark likeliness, and the shipping forecast. Call 976-DITCH-WITCHES. Ah, the lovely gravediggers, where would we be without them? I happen to know that a few of you have recently joined the League of Lady Gravediggers. How simply divine. Now, I would be remiss in my duties to you as your host if I neglected to mention, especially in light of your frightful seeing of the mystique, the tale of the Flying Dutchman, the legendary ghost ship, cursed and doomed to remain adrift at sea for all of eternity, never reaching any port. The glorious tall-masted ship is the last thing anyone should ever hope to see, either from upon the waves aboard another ship, nor spied from the calming shore. More on this in a moment. The first, let's say fact, that you should know is that the story of the Flying Dutchman was born out of European myths and maritime lore, and that these fanciful stories and legends influenced others to then create more stories, even novels and plays, poems, and an opera featuring the jinxed vessel. In one of the founding versions of the tale, the brash and bold captain of the illustrious ship, a man named Vanderdecken, bets the devil that he can steer his ship easily around the Cape of Good Hope in the most monstrous storm ever seen on the face of the earth. When he fails and ends the lives of many of his men, he is cursed by the devil into servitude on board the Flying Dutchman, never to touch dry land for all of eternity. Oh, sorry. This telling is so dreamy. This telling is the basis for the 1843 Wagner opera that I hesitate to pronounce for you, but it's something like Der Fliegende Holländer. Doesn't that sound nice? Another rendition has in its spotlight Captain Falkenberg, who is also the brusque and risk-taking type. He daringly engages in a game of dice with the Dark Lord and loses, condemning his soul and his crew to sail the Spectre ship on the North Sea forever. This gambling theme is then found in the poems of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Coleridge and Rokeby by Sir Walter Scott. Many of the stories attest that anyone who might glimpse the ill-fated ship, the Flying Dutchman, should regard the sight of it as a terrible omen and suffer a luckless future, or even their own impending death. So that's charming. The problem, if you will, my lovelies, is that actual human people began seeing the cursed ship with their own eyes, and then reporting their sightings of it in actual logbooks, right alongside of their daily testimonies regarding sea conditions, happenings on board, supply reports, and encounters with other vessels at sea. They wrote sincerely of seeing the Flying Dutchman. It's as though the stories of the grand ethereal ship brought it forth out of fantasy and into reality, as if such a thing were possible. In fact, over the centuries, there have been many sightings of the ship, and not just from drunken sailors hoping to spook a pretty barmaid into leaping into their arms type stories. Oh no. Sightings of the Flying Dutchman have been reported by some very prestigious personnel. The most famous sighting came from the testimony of a future king, and his deposition of the damned ship included the demise of one who saw it, fulfilling the prophecy of the curse. In the year 1881, then Prince George of Wales was serving on board the HMS Inconstant, the fastest warship of its time. In his reporting logbook, he wrote,
July 11th. 4 a.m. The Flying Dutchman crossed our bows. A strange red light, as of a phantom ship, all aglow, in the midst of which light the mast, spars, and sails of a brig 200 yards distant stood out in strong relief as she came upon the port bow, where also the officer of the watch from the bridge clearly saw her, as did the quarter-deck midshipman, who was sent forward at once to the forecastle. But on arriving, there was no vestige nor any sign whatever of any material ship to be seen, either near nor right away to the horizon, the night being clear and the sea being calm. 13 persons altogether saw her. At 10:45 a.m., the ordinary seaman who had this morning reported the Flying Dutchman fell from the foretopmast crosstrees onto the topgallant forecastle and was smashed to atoms.
There were rampant rumors about the ship all over the world, warning you that if you should have the misfortune to encounter her, silently aglow, adrift upon the waves, that the last thing you should ever do would be to hail or approach the godforsaken ship, for the cursed on board would surely try to kidnap you to serve alongside their rotting souls, or even to try to somehow use you or your ship to send messages to their long-dead loved ones. Ah, we in the library would have helped them for certain. Ah. The last official reported sighting of the devil-owned ship, the Flying Dutchman, wasn't a few hundred years ago, like you may quietly be telling yourself, to drown out the idea that such things could be real. No. The last unhappy crew to gaze upon the ghostly craft did so less than 100 years ago, they themselves being ill-fated from the start, were a group of Nazi submariners who, in the 1940s, reported seeing the eerie, tall-masted ship whilst surfacing from the depths. And we all know what side fate chose for them. Oh, before I entrance you with my next awful aquatic tale, my lovelies, I do want to mention that in addition to the citizens, who've reported seeing the Mystique in our local harbor, which is impossible and possibly a, sadly, an alcohol-induced hallucination. We have also heard, unbelievably, that a few have seen a toy sailboat version of the elusive ship floating unmoored on Peril Pond, and that the seeing of the diminutive splendid ship has brought them minor inconveniences luck-wise. Supposedly, they've experienced seafaring nightmares of sinking beneath inky waves, or being ripped to bits by black barracudas, or lying on the seabed and choking on oily mud. I can only say, well, I'm marginally sorry to hear this, because the ship, the Mystique, in any form, is truly a shining gift to behold, and anyone who sees it should be grateful. So, try to be that, if you see it. Let's see, it seems to me there was one other thing that befell the unworthy onlookers. Oh yes, bedwetting. Extensive bedwetting, like, throw the mattress out, buckets of wee flooding. I mean, how sad. Now, what if I told you, my dear guest, that one ship that was surely set to become, or maybe even was for a time, a phantom ship, never even made it out to sea, and was instead raised from her watery grave more than 300 years after coming to rest on the bottom of the ocean, and that you can visit her today. If you have never heard the riveting tale of the divine ship, Vasa, I invite you to swashbuckle up, because her dead were lifted with her. And you can visit them, too. A brief but luscious history. In 1625, King Gustav II is determined to build Sweden's reputation as a fierce and feared war power across Europe. He commissions the designing and construction of four new warships, the largest one ever attempted to be built. Is to be named Vasa, which undeservedly translates casually to mean bundle of sticks. But I will soon illustrate for you that the ship was anything but that. Soon after the keel is laid in the shipyard, the Dutch master shipwright, the ship's architect, becomes ill and hands over the building of the colossal ship to his apprentice. Within a year, the master designer is dead. Is there a curse? Maybe. Construction of the enormous ship whips along at a blistering pace. Fully formed, Vasa is 226 feet long from stem to stern, 164 feet tall from the keel to the top of the main mast, of which there are three, bedecked with 10 vast and billowing sails. It's the first to have two entire gun decks outfitted with the most cannons ever on board a ship, 64. Vasa weighed over 1,200 tons. The ballast alone, the heaping weight of boulders that rest in the belly of such vessels to aid them in keeping their bottoms balanced in the water, the ballast alone weighed 120 tons. That's 240,000 pounds of stone. The entire ship weighed over 2.5 million pounds. And I know what you're envisioning. Just a run-of-the-mill tall ship. Very old-timey and elegant. With maybe a red or white stripe along the giant hull, and some pretty tall timber masts with all of that lovely rigging and ratlins, cream-colored canvas sails, and maybe a fancy wheel and a crow's nest with a bright flag up above. But Vasa was never so simple a thing. Never. One of the reasons for the tremendous mass of Vasa was made manifest in the name of opulence and adornment. Vasa was literally decked out with decorations. Master carvers from all over were commissioned to emblazon nearly every surface of the giant ship with knights in realistic armor, angels, cherubs, mermaids, lions, beasts, and ornate scrollwork beams. There were figures from history, victorious symbols, and a massive coat of arms, all carved from heavy wood. Even the large gunnery doors, when lifted, to expose the fierce cannon barrels, each of the undersides displayed the head of a huge, roaring lion. And unlike other ships with a band or a splash of color here or there, Vasa's every minute spanse and decoration was painted in fiery, brilliant colors. the unbelievable sight of her overwhelming size and the confidence of her vivid colors and double decks of deadly cannons were meant to strike fear into the hearts of all that faced her. But not a single encounter for a single second ever happened. Early in the summer of 1628, the supervisor of Voss's construction decided to conduct a simple test because he was concerned about curious structural anomalies he detected on board the moored ship. He invited a vice admiral to witness the results of his test. He instructed only 30 sailors to run in a group back and forth across the deck of the stupendous ship. Vasa shockingly rolled and dipped deeply from side to side from just the shifting weight of the running gang of men while it was resting on calm water. The alarmed admiral calls the test to a halt immediately, afraid that the mighty ship will be tipped and sank where it sits. King Gustav was unfazed and ordered the new ship to set sail. Just a few months later, on August 10th, the giant ship, Vasa, is loaded with guns and tons of goods and supplies, and a crew of 150. On this clear day, the ship was detached from its lashings, and its sails set to catch the slightest breeze to aid her in her maiden voyage out to sea. The fearsome and visually stunning craft drifted less than half of a single mile out and was still well in view of the onlookers of her home port. All of a sudden, a mild gale swelled and billowed her many sails, tipped the mammoth completely over onto her port side in the water that rushed into the glorious open gun ports with thousands of gallons of seawater that immediately washed through the lower decks and gushed into every hatchway, hall, compartment, and room of the newly built ship. Within seconds, right before the eyes of thousands of dignitaries, workers, and well-wishers, Vasa sank beneath the waves and came to rest on the seabed. And what was to be the great and terrifying war machine of the king became instead an embarrassing disaster. The royal council is tasked with informing the king, and a full inquest is begun, resulting unbelievably in no one being held responsible for the catastrophe, which is to this day said to have been unavoidable due to several interlocking components: poor design, a rush to work, too narrow or shallow of a belly on the ship, combined with the demand of the unfathomable weight of the ship's overloaded uppers, making her top heavy and completely unstable in the water. Luckily, of the 150 beings on board, only 30 were thought to have drowned. Had Vasa been crewed for war service, she would have contained over 500 souls. One thing, the ship was never considered a shipwreck nor lost at sea because Everyone knew approximately where she was, lying on her side, laden with goods and cannons, decorated with all of her lavish carvings. Just a short distance out from her port of build. In the coming years, better diving methods permit the retrieval of some of Vasa's cargo and many of her heavy cannons. Still years later, several attempts are made to shift the ship or even to raise the boat, but all of these fail. Salvagers apply to dive and dismantle the ship, or even to blast it apart to get to its well-preserved and expensive black oak beams, which are in high demand for the making of Art Deco furniture at the time. Thankfully, the Maritime Council refused. Serious talk of raising the well-preserved Vasa began in 1956, with even strange and odd suggestions, such as filling the intact ship with ping pong balls to restore buoyancy, are heard. But in the end, the tried and true method of digging small tunnels beneath the huge boat and then feeding long lengths of rope through them to make a kind of corded cradle, to which later inflatable bladders are to be attached to help float the boat, as it is assisted to the surface by towering cranes, is the method that is employed. This arduous preparation takes years to complete. On April 24th of 1961, in front of a bigger crowd than the one that witnessed her sinking, Vasa is disinterred from her 330-year sea grave, resurfacing in the bright light of day. Astonishingly, she's nearly completely intact. I apologize for being emotional. This thing with me and tall ships, I really do need to look into it. Oh, the dead. How could we forget the dead? Vasa held within her heart the bones of roughly 30 people. And the complete, or nearly complete, skeletons of 17 of them. Most of the remains are those of men, but there were also 2 women and 1 child. They were lovingly conserved and preserved after being what I like to think of as Vasa's caretakers for more than 3 centuries. Several of them are with her still now. Vasa is housed in a magnificent museum that was specially built for her in Stockholm, Sweden. There are sweeping viewing decks offering the close-up personal experience of seeing the mountainous ship in almost all of her original glory. Visual aids with versions of the brilliantly painted version of the ship are everywhere, as well as interactive displays, a movie, exhibits of the actual goods on board, a restaurant, and of course, a gift shop, and several skeletons belonging to Vasa that you can also see. The faces of several of these doomed souls have been marvelously recreated in shocking detail. Many of them look as alive as you and I look this very moment.
It is believed that anyone who would have known them would recognize them. That's how well the reconstruction is done. Seeing just the pictures of them, you expect them to breathe or speak. Models of their exact skulls were beset with flesh anew, and from their display cases, they look out at you. Where will you be 300 years after your death?
Sorry. That's none of my business.
Although, it could be. If you're unafraid, see me after the reading. Oh, yes. And there are also little models of the Mystique on sale at our information desk, I've just remembered, that have nothing to do with the original or the toy version seen on Peril Pond. These were lovingly made by Stefan Strangeways, so nothing could be suspicious about them in any way, we believe. Now, my lovely, lovely guest, please follow that Mr. Darling at the rear of the room, please. I'm going to make that distinction. And remain inside the cordoned off areas of the library, please. Even if you see another Mr. Darling beckoning you from beyond the ropes, we're having a little reflection issue that doesn't concern you. So, good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Madam, why are we seeing several doppelgangers of me around the library just now?
Well, when I did the duplication spell on Stefan's model of the Mystique, I called out for you to see them, and you became duplicated too.
There can be only one John Darling, madam. So, what are we to do with the others?
Oh, there's only 6 copies of you, darling. So I thought I'd ship you off to my sister witches.
I'm not a party favor, madam. I'm not a toy to be handed out to a bunch of giggling witches.
Well, you've changed your tune since the fall fertility dance.
Do we want air shipping or flat rate boxes?
The Midnight Library is written and produced by me, Miranda Merrick. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We would like to thank everyone at our parent company, Astonishing Legends. The Midnight Library is being crowdfunded by our awesome patrons. They get everything first, plus lots of haunted extras. If you would miss the library if it closed, please support it. Visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Do this at midnight for extra protection. To find your favorite Midnight Library, Broom and Fang Pub, or League of Lady Gravediggers bizarre merch, visit redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. And everything will be just fine.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I got here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.